Hi everyone, this is the Bad Apples, Season 3, Episode 5. Today I've got a couple of tutorials. I have one for Blender, so if you are wanting to know a little bit more about Blender, obviously it's such a huge program that it's kind of hard to just, you know, do one tutorial and have you walk away thinking that you've learned a lot, but I do a tutorial on it and you will learn something. So that's cool, and I've got a Fluxbox tutorial, very very small, simple, just about how to turn on transparency in Fluxbox so it looks cool and hip and like you're a really cool hacksaw type. And I also have some listener feedback that I'll go over, and I think that's it. So let's get started. Okay, so listener feedback. I got a couple of really cool emails lately. One was from Tim. I don't know if I'm supposed to say last names. One's from Tim. And he was saying that he was he's been a Linux user who bought a MacBook about a year ago, and he started kind of listening to the Bad Apples since I heard your first, you know, I'm just going to read this so that it makes more sense. Klaatu, as a Linux user that bought a MacBook about a year ago, I've been dipping in and out of the Bad Apples since I heard your first guest spot on Linux Reality. Today I just happened to find Season 2, Episode 3, called Apple Revisited. What can I say? Gold. Everything that frustrates me about Apple in one convenient, sarcastic podcast. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Tim. Yeah. I've heard from a couple of people that Season 2, Episode 3 is kind of the where I hit my highest point, which is fine with me, believe me. I think it's a great episode, too. Yeah, that's a funny episode. What can I say? I know of what I speak, apparently. I imagine not everyone would appreciate that episode, but I'm glad you did, Tim, and I've heard, like I say, I have heard a lot of positive feedback about that show, so it's cool. I'm glad I could put that out there so people could enjoy it. That's what I'm glad about. Another email from a guy named Doug, and this is a fairly long one, but it's a really informative email, so I'll read a portion of it. Last night I was listening to the latest Bad Apple episode, and you mentioned that you're learning C or C++ to build GUI programs with Qt. He's saying this about me, because I mentioned it, I guess, in a couple episodes ago. I don't want to discourage you, as I was, / am, a C, C++ developer. Love the language, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, you might want to consider using Python as well, or instead. Certainly I'm biased, as I'm using Python right now on a daily basis at the job, but using Python can make your development work much easier, to say the least. When I was building MFC applications, I think that's some kind of Microsoft thing, I spent about 80% of my time dealing with language issues rather than the app, and it was just really wordy to write GUI apps in C++. There are libraries for Qt and WX Windows for Python to build GUI apps with, and they simplify things a lot. You also don't lose too much performance, as Python is acting as glue code between the compiled library calls. So that's an interesting email, and I've heard from a couple of people the same thing, like just kind of, you know, if you're trying to get started, you might want to start with Python, and I am fine with that. It sounds like good advice to me. Definitely learning C or C++ does seem to be like a pretty big chunk of education to bite off, you know, right away. And I'm actually concurrently learning Python with C and C++. And I have to say, if you haven't tried Python yet and you are interested in programming, you really might want to give it a try. It's one of those languages that seems very multi-purpose. You know, you can slap it on a server, you can slap it on your computer, you can just do a lot of stuff. It can be terminal-based, it can be GUI, you know, it's just a really flexible kind of language. So, or rather, it has flexible in how many different applications it could be used. So, if you haven't tried anything with Python yet, I would highly recommend it. It's been a lot of fun learning it. I'm really enjoying it. It's pretty addicting too. And it does have the value of being pretty quick fix. You know, you're just like, you're up and running pretty quick, or not up and running, but you go a long way in a less amount of time, I think. Video applications are sort of an interest of mine. I say sort of because I was about to say a passion of mine. They're really a big interest of mine. I do a lot of video editing. And as it happens, when I started using Linux, you know, everyone was not quite clear on whether Linux was all about video yet, and, you know, was there that killer video app yet, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the answer is kind of yes and no at the same time. But that's not Linux's fault, that's video applications' fault. And what I'm trying to say here is that video applications, when you say, quote, video application, you know, what are you saying? Are you saying iMovie 06? Are you saying iMovie 08? Are you saying Pinnacle? Are you saying Avid? You mean Final Cut? You mean Avid Express or Final Cut Express? Or do you mean After Effects? Or do you mean Maya? Or do you mean Shake or Motion or Smoke or, you know, Flame? You know, what are you talking about? No one knows what they're talking about when they say, quote, video application. Because what's a, quote, video application to me is not necessarily, you know, a really ideal video application for someone else, and vice versa. So when people say, oh, is Linux good with video? Kind of depends on what you're talking about. You know, I mean, if you're talking about really high-end, powerhouse kind of multimedia creator applications, yeah, Linux has that pretty well covered. I don't think anyone would be able to argue that Big Buck Bunny and Elephant's Dream could ever have been made if Linux didn't have the, you know, video creation software just absolutely taken care of. So I would say that the proof was in the pudding. And so there you go. The answer to video in Linux, in many ways, is Blender. It's a really fantastic application. And just like, for instance, Final Cut Pro, you know, Blender is many different things all rolled up into one. A lot of people will say Final Cut, and they will be talking about the suite of applications, you know, that Apple has packaged together into a big bundle and called it Final Cut Studio. Applications for sound, for composite, not compositing, well, limited compositing, for like particle generation or motion graphics, for editing video, stuff like that. That's Final Cut. Blender is, in a similar way, something that has many different aspects to it. There's, you know, I mean, it's really well known for its animation capabilities, its three-dimensional animation capabilities. Now, what's interesting to me about that is that it has just as much of a right to be known for everything else that it can do, because it's really a really solid platform. You will find there are really interesting two-dimensional animations being made in Blender. Specifically at blendernation.com/2008/07/26/cut-out-animation-in-blender. And I'll try to include that in the show notes. Great looking two-dimensional animation that you might have seen traditionally done, for instance, on something like Flash, or some program like that. You're seeing it done in Blender, and they're doing it really well. Blender can also do video editing, and I'm going to be the first one, before you write me and say that I'm crazy, I'll be the first one to say, yeah, not necessarily everyone is going to be using Blender for their video editing. Now, in my totally, idealistic video editing snob mind, I would say that everyone should be using Blender for their video editing because it's a stable platform, and the model, the workflow model, is much more similar to any other professional application you're going to find out there than something, for instance, that models itself after iMovie, which is hands down one of the worst video editing applications created, at least iMovie 06. iMovie 08, admittedly, is a really interesting take on video editing, but 06 was basically a destructive form of video editing, just steps backwards for the world of video editing, and I don't know how it endured for so long. But Blender it's got a very robust interface, and it's so robust, I would say, that it does kind of throw people off. It throws people for a loop. Lucky for you, I'm going to reveal to you and the world how to video edit on Blender. Now, in this initial little tutorial that I'm going to be doing, I'm not going to go into a whole lot of specifics. The goal of this tutorial is to get video in, to cut it up, to maybe put some transitions on it, and that's it. Okay? There's a lot of stuff to Blender that I could cover. There's a lot of stuff to video editing that I could cover. And that's not just one show. That would be very overwhelming. So this is going to be about sitting down in front of Blender, not being afraid of it, grabbing the video, cutting it up, organizing it, or manipulating it, and that's that. It'll be a good starting place. So if you've got some video that you're trying to splice together, or cut some bad parts out of, and you're on Linux, Blender is probably just a apt-get or a yum install or whatever away. Although, having said that, I would not necessarily use apt-get or yum or urpmi to get Blender. Why? Well, because Blender, as packaged by distributions, often is compiled with certain codec support left out for, political or licensing issues. So if you're going to be sitting down just editing video and you want to make sure you can get that video in without any kind of weird errors about not having codec support or something like that, what I would do if I were you was first install all the codecs you can think of, FFmpeg especially, but just everything you can think of, all the video codecs you can muster. Install those from your repos because those are going to be coming in handy. And then just go to blender.org and download the Linux version of Blender. They compile it. You can compile it yourself or you can download it pre-compiled. They compile it with all the support built in. And so pretty much, whatever kind of video that you can play normally under Linux, you're going to be able to throw at Blender and have it import it just fine. Okay, that was the warning. You have been warned. First thing you should do to get this party started is to open up Blender. And you'll want to switch it over to full screen. That's what I find is the best way to work in Blender, is just to go up to the little icon in the left-hand corner of the title bar and just click on the icon, go into the advanced menu, and go into full screen mode. And this will dominate your desktop. At least my KDE 4 desktop kind of warns me about that. It says, hey, you're going to take over your whole screen. You're not going to have any buttons other than that application. And it tells you how to get out of that mode. So if you go full screen, you realize you need to get out of full screen. Typically, Alt F3 will access that advanced menu again, and you can go and uncheck full screen. Or you can also, if you think about it, you can just, if you have a hotkey combination to switch your virtual desktops, like I use Control-Alt, either right or left arrow, I just switch over to another screen. So if it's like you've got your storyboard on desktop 3 and you've got Blender open on desktop 4, I'll have desktop 4 full screen Blender, and then I'll just switch over to desktop 3 if I need to refer to like a storyboard or whatever. So that works. But it's really nice to work in full screen because you just need you know, you want as much screen real estate as possible. And Blender, you're going to find the interface is actually quite flexible. Yet another reason I love this program. You can really maximize your screen space depending on what activity you're doing. Oh, look at that. That's a perfect segue to the next thing we're going to be doing. Okay, so at the top of the screen now, you're going to see a menu, a drop-down menu. And by default, it opens up in something called SR:2-model. And I'm not really sure what the SR stands for off the top of my head. Don't really think about it. But what it means is that screen, the screen layout is the way that the different windows are subdivided and everything like that. You're looking at the model, the 3D modeling space. I know nothing about 3D modeling. I wouldn't know what to do in the modeling space at all. So what you can do is click on that drop-down menu and go to the number 4 sequence preset, Windows preset, called Sequence. And by the way, all of this stuff that I'm talking about is online. Nice, beautiful screenshots at straightedgelinux.com/videoblender. And that video blender is a capital B. Got it? Capital B. So video blender with a capital B. And of course, I'll include the link in the show notes as well. So you go into your sequence mode, and that's going to get you to a slightly more familiar or friendly, less scary setup. You'll see a lot of gray area still, but in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a black box, black window. That's going to be your view, your little viewer, as you can probably imagine. Straight through the middle, horizontally through the middle, that's your timeline or your sequence window. That's where you're going to be dragging all your little video clips into. And that's where you rearrange them and put, you know, little Johnny jumping on the trampoline before the shot of little Johnny falling off the trampoline. You know, you got to edit this stuff. So then you've got your little setup there. The black box is your viewer. Big gray space in the middle is your sequence, your timeline. And below that are a whole lot of buttons. And we're going to get into those buttons eventually, but not in this tutorial. So what I usually do is I just collapse the bottom part of the screen at this point in my workflow. Because you don't need those buttons necessarily while you're editing the video. That's more, at least what we're doing, that'll be more coming into play once we're ready to export. So you can just kind of grab like right below one of those menu bars and pull it down. And then you can go up to the next menu bar and pull that down. You'll get the hang of it. And if not, it's not a big problem. It's just a button bar. I'm just saying you don't really have to pay attention to that part at the bottom so much. Okay, so a lot of our work, all of our work, is going to be done in that big gray strip across the middle, that dark gray area. And again, that is called the sequence window. So first thing we need to do is import our video footage. And the way that we do that is we go to the, so there's the gray space called the sequence area, right? Right under that is a series of buttons, of menus. There's select, marker, add, and strip. And that's an interesting thing about Blender, that by default, most of the menu bars, instead of being at the top of the window, are kind of at the bottom. So that's just something that you can get used to, or you can switch it. Like I say, Blender's really, really flexible. You can just change whatever you want to. But I just usually leave them where they are. But they are at the bottom. So you'll go to the bottom of the sequence section, and you'll click on Add, and you can hit Movie and plus Audio, HD. Now you can also, if you want, just kind of have your mouse in that area, in the sequence area, and hit the space bar. That's a good shortcut. Space bar is the Add Media button. Or it's more than that, but that's what we'll use it for right now. It's to add different things to a window. So you hit spacebar, and it says, what would you like to add? And you can click Movie plus Audio. Now, if you just want just the movie, because you're going to drop in audio later or something, you can do that as well. But just know that if you want movie and audio, you need to select movie and audio. That will get rid of your sequence window momentarily and show you what's called the file browser window. And the file browser window is just a pop-up window where you can browse through your files on your hard drive. This is just your standard Linux file system. You're looking at your hard drive, so go into your home directory and go into wherever you have all your videos and grab the video that you want to import. If you're getting an error at this point after you try to add the video, it is probably because of codec support. That would be the first thing I would check. Make sure that you have video that is in some way supported by Linux. Now, if it's still not importing, it might be that it's not playing on your computer either, so make sure that you have that codec installed. I've never actually had any problem other than that. That's always been my problem, is something won't have a codec support, and the fix is usually to install the codec or convert the video, unfortunately, which you don't want to do, but if you have to, you have to. So we'll import. You click on the video name, and then up in the right-hand corner, there's a Select Movie plus Audio button, and you click that to actually do the importing. You can't just double-click on the name of the video. You have to click the little confirmation button. So immediately, it just gets rid of the file browser window, and you're just kind of hanging out in your sequence. And if you move your mouse around, you'll find that attached, as it were, to the mouse arrow are two strips. One will be green, and that's the audio. One will be blue, and that's the video. And what it's wanting you to do is to click to anchor that audio and video on the timeline somewhere. Since this is the first video clip that we have imported, we will drag it pretty much all the way to the left to the zero marker and click, so that we've just anchored it at the very beginning, 0 seconds of that sequence. And you can see the numbers of seconds across the bottom of the sequence window. And you can see all this stuff on that little tutorial site. It's very clear. So you click. One thing I should probably have mentioned in advance, but if you can get a 3-button mouse for Blender, you will be doing yourself an enormous favor. It's almost a requirement. And I'm not a multi-button mouse kind of guy. I don't go crazy, you know, I need 8 mouse buttons. I need really 1, but for Linux, I guess you need 2. So 2 mouse buttons, okay? But you need 3 for Blender, really, honestly. Take my advice. So you click to anchor the video and the audio, and it basically pastes it onto the sequence. And now you're looking at the strip, and if you look, you'll see the little vertical green line. That's your playhead. So anything that green line is looking at on your sequence is what that little black box in the upper right-hand corner, your little viewer, that's what, you know, your viewer menu will be showing you. So if you kind of move that along the sequence, you'll be able to see all the different, the video, just to see, you know, you can look at your frames and stuff like that. So that's a good thing to know. Another important thing to know about is the fact that if you click the middle mouse button on the sequence, like on the gray area of the sequence, you can kind of navigate you can move through the sequence. It's hard to explain what you're doing. You're moving the time. You're shifting the time. So let's say that I brought in like 10 minutes of video, right? I'm only seeing maybe, I don't know, 30 seconds on my little screen. So if you middle click on that and drag it to the left, then you're going to be seeing more of your video. That made sense, right? You can also use your mouse wheel to zoom in and out of the sort of zoom in or zoom out on the timeline, so that you're seeing 30 seconds as a tiny little thing, or you're seeing it as, you know, a very close up video strip where you can get kind of down and dirty, get right down to the single frame almost. So those are two very good tricks. Now, in order to if you want to just look at the video and kind of play it through, you'll want to hit Alt-A. Alt-A is to play. And to stop it, you simply hit the spacebar. Okay? So Alt-A, I think that actually probably stands for like animate or something like that. But it's just, it's play. I always think of it as action. Okay, so we've got this video strip, and maybe you're playing through it, and you're kind of getting a sense for it. Maybe you are liking what you're seeing, and then you realize, oh, there's something that needs to be cut out right there. Okay, so you can hit space to pause your playhead, and you can click around in your just normal left click so that the playhead kind of follows your mouse, and find this frame that you want to cut. You can also use the left and right arrows to go forward a frame or two, or backwards a frame. And so get your playhead positioned at a place that you want to cut. Now you need to right-click on the video and the audio. If you're doing audio, you need to right-click on the video clip, or the video bar, the video strip, and then you shift-right-click on the audio. So you're selecting both at the same time, because obviously you can cut one without cutting the other if you so choose. But let's just assume that we need to cut both. So you right-click to select a video strip, and then you hold down the shift key to select something in addition to that. So you would right-click on the audio as well with the shift key held down. Pretty easy if you think about it. So now you've got both the audio and the video selected. And right where your playhead is where you, at this point, where you've decided you want to make a cut. So you hit K. That's the letter K on your keyboard. And that is to cut. And that is to cut spelled with a K, apparently. That splices the video strip. Just makes a splice right down the center, and the audio strip. So that was easy. We've made our first splice. It's almost like we're making movies. I mean, this is video editing, folks. This is great. Okay, so we've cut. Now, play forward a little bit more. Hit Alt-A, or you can scrub, you know, just click around in the sequence, and your playhead will jump to your mouse, and you can kind of get a sense. You can click and drag, too, and kind of, it's called scrubbing the video. You're just kind of getting a sense for like what's in that video sequence. So find something else that you want to cut out, so you've just cut, so maybe now you want to cut again so that we can like take that section and get rid of it, for instance. So find a good point to mark out and do the same thing. You're going to right-click on the video, shift-right-click on the audio, hit K to cut, and now right-click on the smaller piece that you want to get rid of now. So this is the scene that maybe this was a bad take or something that we need to get rid of, or an embarrassing moment when you didn't look your best on the home video. So you're going to right-click on the video, right, and shift-right-click on the audio, and then just hit the delete key. Memory serves, it'll ask you if you are sure that you want to delete. You want to erase the selected. Well, yes, we do. So you click OK. And now we've just gotten rid of, you know, however many seconds that you decided to cut out. That's video that we do not have to make people suffer through. That's great. That's why we edit. So now we've got these two disjointed video clips, right? We've got one at the beginning, we got a big gap, and we got some at the end. And we need to bring these together. So to do this, it's very easy. You simply right-click on the last, you know, that the section at the end, the video at the end, shift right click on the audio at the end, and then you're going to hit the G key. That is the G key on your keyboard, and that grabs the tracks. So now again, they're hooked up to your mouse, basically. Anywhere you move your mouse, those two tracks, the video and the audio, are going to follow. So now what I would do if I were you, just for demonstration, is take those two tracks, drag them to the left so that they're, you know, that we're basically covering up that splice. But now move them up a little bit on the sequence. So right now maybe you've got your video and your audio track assigned to what I would call like track 0 and track 1. Okay, well maybe move these other stragglers up one level so that we can actually get that video and audio strips, we can get those two to overlap a little bit in the sequence. Now what's going to happen in the sequence when we do this? oh, by the way, you click the mouse to anchor it again. So you click the mouse and it drops the video right where you had your mouse on the sequence. Okay, so what's going to happen here is that simply the video, the playhead is going to be playing along, it encounters that little overlap, and it defaults to whichever video is, you know, at the top level. It doesn't show, you know, both by default or anything like that. It defaults to whichever video track is, you know, on the top level of the viewer. So in order to, for instance, do a cross dissolve, because maybe a hard cut just doesn't work there, right? Well, you want to give a cross dissolve a fair amount of time. Cross dissolves that are too fast, like they only take, you know, 1 second to happen, those tend to be a little bit abrupt, to be honest. So you may want to play around with that. Make sure that you've got a good overlap going on, because obviously the top one is going to start fading out as the bottom one is going to start fading in, so it's a cross dissolve. So you want to make sure there's enough action there to dissolve between. But I'll let you play around with that. So the way to do that is you're going to select the video tracks from which and to which you want to dissolve. So you just, you're going to right-click on the bottom video track, and then you're going to, again, shift right-click on the top video track. We're not dissolving sound. Sound is not video. Sound is typically not edited concurrently with video, and that is why we're not dissolving between sound in a video editing application. You do that kind of work in an audio application. So we've got both video tracks, and then you go down to that bottom little menu bar again, and you go to Add, and this is where you first went to add your movie and your audio in the first place. But this time you go up to the Effect choice, and in the Effect window, there are a number of built-in effects, as well as options to do plugins, and I will probably end up including a link to all the Blender plugins that I have found, or at least like a good place to go for some. But anyway, there's the Effect, and then the one that you're looking for is Gamma Cross. And Gamma Cross is going to simply do a pretty traditional cross dissolve. And you can play around with other ones as well. There's one just cross. It just kind of depends on the look that you're going for. And you select that, and once again in the sequence there appears what's going to sort of look like another video track, region, but really it's an effect region. And you can position it wherever however high or low on the sequence that you want. I just put it right on top of the videos, just one track above the top video. And you click to anchor it yet again. And now that cross dissolve exists, and if you press play or you scrub across the video, you will see the top video track fading out and the bottom one fading in. It's kind of cool. And you can certainly play around with other effects and just kind of get a hang for the navigation in Blender, get a hang of how you select video and move it around. Remember that K is for cut, G is for grab. Middle mouse button moves you, you know, from 0 seconds to however farther down the line you need to be, you know, in your video track. So those are really good ones. Mouse wheel up and down zooms you in to your sequence so that you're seeing almost a frame-by-frame kind of size, or you can zoom out and see, you know, a big, big, long video sequence all cut together and everything like that from kind of a high level view. So that's about it. I mean, I could go on forever about both, you know, the video editing options that you have in Blender, the workflow of it, and I could do a couple of shows probably on exporting. And I'm purposefully not doing exporting right now because that's a whole other science. If you know any of my HPR episodes, you know that I'm really interested and passionate about compression, and I'm not going to talk about it right now, because if I were to do that, I would not only confuse you, but I would do an injustice to compression, and that's just a shame. So this is plenty of information. If you feel like you're just, if for whatever reason, the other video editing solutions out there for Linux aren't really doing it for you, maybe you want to start down the path of a little bit more of a pro application, or maybe you just don't feel like those other applications are meeting your needs, you might want to try Blender. It might be overkill. It might be like, you know, going into, I don't know, you know, like the proverbial people going out to go get Photoshop, you know, when all they really want to do is rotate a picture, right? You know, I mean, Blender might be an overkill. But I think it's a great application to get to know. I think it's a very powerful application. It's getting better all the time. And I like it a lot. So if you want to try it out, go for it. And be sure to check out the screenshots on straightedgelinux.com/videoblender. Thank you very much. So you're running Fluxbox, and you decide that you want transparency in your windows so that your desktop doesn't look like the lightweight window manager that Fluxbox is. You want some bling. Okay, so it's actually pretty easy to do that, to get transparency going on in Fluxbox. It involves two different little, I guess, programs that you have to install, because you probably don't have them installed already. And they're simple programs. I mean, you might be able to find it in your repo. Honestly, I just downloaded it from the FTP server and compiled it myself. It was a really easy compile. So the place to get one is called Xcomp Manager, which is spelled X and then COMP and then MGR, just all one word. And that can be found at freedesktop.org/release/xcompmanager-1.1.1.tar.gz. So I will include that in some form of show note. So download that guy and untar it. So, you know, to untar it, you'd simply change the directory that you just downloaded the thing to. In Fluxbox, it's probably not going to be on your desktop per se, because there's no desktop in Fluxbox, but wherever it did end up, maybe a desktop folder or a downloads folder, change directory into that, and then type in tar /xf/xcompmanager-1.1.1.1.tar.gz. That will untar it and ungunzip it. That's right. So you need to do tar-xfz, actually, or xzf, sorry, xzf, space, xcompmanager-1.1.1.tar.gz. That will ungunzip it and untar it as well. So then you can change directory into the xcompmanager-1.1.1, and then simply type /configure, and it will configure it for you. And then you can go ahead and become root, so su, and then your root password, or sudo, you know, however you do the whole root thing in your distribution of choice. And then you say make space, ampersand, ampersand, space, make space install. So it's make and make install. And that will go really quick. It's a tiny little program. All right, now that's installed. Now you need to install trans set, which is, it stands for transparency set, I think. So you get that from another site. It is Forchheimer, Forchheimer.se/transset So that's two S's in there. transet-df-4.tar.gz. And again, I will include that in some kind of show note. And it's just a little patch, transet is, from what I understand. It's like a patch of to X or something like that. It's a really, again, a really small little application. You don't even have to do a whole lot. You just type in, if I recall correctly, you just type in make install, I think so, or just install, something like that. It's really simple. There is a README file in the file itself once you untar it. So again, you would, you know, change directory into wherever that thing got downloaded to. TAR space dash XZF space transet dash DF dash 4.tar.giz, and then it will untar it. So then you change directory CD space transet dash DV dash 4, and then there's a README file and I think another file. I think it's like an install file or something like that. And that will render a that will tell you how to install it, and it's very simple. It's not something that you actually have to compile. It's just something that you need to make sure that you're actually installing. And so it copies the files where it needs to go, and now you're ready to, well, first of all, what you should do is confirm that everything kind of got placed where it needs to go. And the way to do that is you're going to run a little application, xdpyinfo. That is xdpyinfo space pipe space grep space dash I space double quotes render backslash pipe composite double quotes. And all that does is it confirms that in your settings you've got the render and the compositing ability installed and ready to go. So if you get nothing back from that, there's a problem, and you probably need to reinstall Xcomp Manager or Transet, I guess, but I think it's Xcomp Manager. So then what you'll need to do is add some lines for the compositing enabling to your X11, to your Xorg.conf, your Xorg.conf. So if you go cd /etc/x11/Xorg.conf, that is Xorg.conf, then your, well, don't cd into that, sorry, cd /etc/x11. Now you will see a file there called Xorg.conf. And you're going to want to become root again if you're not already. And you're going to, as root, you're going to open up in a text editor, Xorg.conf. Whether that's Vim or Emacs or Nano or Pico or Ed or Joe or whatever. Xemacs. Gedit, whatever, Kate. Whatever it is, you're going to open that up and you're going to be as root. So now you will add a section, so that's the word section, space, double quotes, extensions, double quotes. Next line is option, space, double quote, composite, close double quote, space, double quote, enable, close double quote. Next line, option, space, double quote, render, close double quote, space, double quote, enable, close double quote. And then the section is closed with the word end section on the fourth line. I will try to put that in the show notes. I might not remember, but I will try. Okay, so now everything's basically pretty much turned on, and you'll need to restart X. I guess the most fail-safe way to do this, and I like to do things really, really fail-safe, because then if it doesn't work, you're like, okay, well, did I just not restart X correctly, or did this just not work, or what's going on? So let's just make sure it restarts X by, well, you can log out, and if you get back to, like, your, you could restart, too. If you want to restart, you can do that. You can log out, and usually in your GDM or KDM or XDM, there's a button somewhere to restart the X server. It should flash and blink and stuff like that. And you can also just do Control Alt Backspace. I guess you could do it that way too. But anyway, it'll restart your X server and you'll be back either at your login screen or whatever, however you chose to restart it. But just make sure that you've restarted it, log back into Fluxbox, and now everything should have kicked in. Now, the easiest way to, what you're going to do right now just to see if it actually works and stuff, open up a terminal, type in xcompmanager, so that's xcompmgr, all one word, xcompmgr, space, dash, c, space, ampersand. Okay, so this is going to start XCOMP Manager and move it to a background process of that terminal. Don't close the terminal. But you'll immediately see drop shadows appear under your terminal. It'll be kind of nice. So that's neat. And then there are different features. You can play around with XCOMP Manager. And, of course, that would just be like man XCOMP MGR. Or XCOMP Manager -help -h will print all the different options. But this gets it up and running, and it gives you drop shadows right away. And for the transparent windows, that is where you go for transset. So that is transset, that's transset-df space 0 dot some number, and that some number will be any number from, well, I guess it's 0 through 9, but you wouldn't probably want 0. But as you go further down the scale, it gets less visible. So if you just want a slight transparency, it's going to be like maybe, I would say, 0.7, maybe 0.8. Maybe 0.6. I find 0.6 a little bit transparent, but maybe it'll differ from monitor to monitor. I don't know. I've only done this on my EEE PC, so I haven't really tried it on anything else. So you can play around with that. So 0 through 9, with 9 being very, very not transparent, and 0 being, I think that would be completely transparent. You should be cautious. So after you type that command in, your cursor, your mouse cursor, becomes a little crosshair, and whatever window you click on will become less transparent, will become that percentage of transparency. All right, so the if you can confirm that it's all working and you like it, you're excited, you're happy, that's great. What you might want to do, at least what I do, is I start XCOMP Manager space dash C space ampersand from the Fluxbox startup file, which can be found, again, just go open up a terminal, cd space tilde space, cd space tilde slash dot Fluxbox. That's the hidden directory where all your Fluxbox files are. And in there, you'll see a file called startup. And it's a really well-commented file, but that doesn't mean I'm going to make you read it all. But it does mean that it is well-commented, and you might want to read it because you'll find out some interesting things. But you you can add the line in there, xcompmgr space dash c space ampersand. And you want to make sure you put the ampersand, from what I understand. I guess I could try it without it sometime just to see what would happen. But it's a series, it's doing a series of, it's opening a series of applications, including Fluxbox itself. So you don't want it to open up XCOMP Manager -C and then stop. You want it to proceed through XCOMP manager dash C, and then the ampersand sign, that sends it to the background process, and then it continues to the next application. That's as I understand it. I haven't really played around with that. I just take their word for it and put the ampersand behind the application, because it says you're supposed to do that, so I do. And that's it. That's getting that'll get transparency going in your Fluxbox environment, which is nifty. You know, I mean, it makes it look a little bit fancier that way. It's not fun when all your Linux using friends are using their fancy compiz effects and their Matisse's and their K-Wins and everything like that, and their plasmoids, and you're sitting around with everything being completely opaque. So if you need to impress people, you can just make some of your windows less opaque. People will think you're really cool. And if you if you do that, you might see a performance loss because now you're asking the graphics processor to think about, you know, transparency and stuff like that. Not easy for a graphics processor, depending on what graphics processor you've got. Certainly on the EEE PC, it's, you know, one of those, obviously, an onboard chip, it's an Intel chip, I'm pretty sure. And those are no good. I mean, they give you a display, and they are not guaranteeing any kind of eye candy at all. So while you will find that XCOMP MGR and Transet-DF do work, you might find weird little anomalies, like when you make a window larger, it will not fill the rest of the window in. It'll know that you want it to be a wider window or whatever, but it won't actually draw the content, and you'll have to like move it around to kind of wake it up and stuff like that. It's very bothersome. Luckily for you, well, I don't know about for the Intel chips, but if you're using like NVIDIA graphics card, then there are certain tweaks that you can do in order to enable GLX and other kinds of compositing. Now, because I do not have anything available to me with those kinds of fancy graphics cards at the moment, I have not been able to test the fixes, I haven't been able to test the performance or anything like that, so you'll have to try that on your own. And the way that I learned how this was done, and the way that you can find out more about the NVIDIA tweaks and hacks, is the Fluxbox Wiki, which is a really pretty good site. Go to fluxbox-wiki.org/index.php/transparency with a capital T, and you will not only find pretty much everything I've been talking about here, practically, I think, pretty much the same way. I followed their instructions to a T. I don't think that I had to adjust. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I didn't have to make any adjustments. It was just one of those really simple processes to go through. But in addition, you will also get the NVIDIA tweaks as well. So enjoy and show it off. So there's a new podcast in town. Unfortunately, it's not a new tech podcast. Well, not unfortunately. I shouldn't say it like that. It is not a new it's not a tech podcast. But what it is a very interesting. The way I think about it is I think of it as hacking language. You know, it's a linguistic podcast. Okay, but you will know one of the hosts at least from Hacker Public Radio. It's Plexi. And she did a fairly early episode, if I recall correctly, on chunk parsing, which was an absolutely fascinating episode. Half of it went way over my head. I was like, what is this person talking about? But it was fascinating to hear. And And so since then, she's gone on to make a show called Linguist Chat, and that's at linguistchat.org. It's on maybe its first episode right now, so it's a brand new podcast. But check it out. It's a really it, I think it's going to be a really interesting show. Another one of the hosts on that show will be Scarlett, who, if you listened to episode two, oh man, was it 2.25 of mine? Second, no, I don't. Well, sometime in the second season, I think, or maybe the first season, I don't know. We were doing an episode on GIMP, me and Scarlett. She helped me introduce the GIMP on that episode, and then she turned up at the KDE release event, so we did a quick interview there together. And where else did we hook up? Oh yes, we have a podcast called FedoraReloaded.com, so that's where you might know her as well. So she'll be doing some linguistic stuff on there, I guess. And yeah, we'll see who else pops up on that show. It should be a really interesting one. It's not like a daily thing or anything. It's more like, once a week kind of. It's not like Hacker Public Radio crazy, crazy schedule. It's like once a week an episode on linguistics. Should be fascinating. I'm excited about it. So check that out. It's linguistchat.org. And with any luck, I'm going to get Plexi on this show to be interviewed. But we'll see. Yeah, check it out. Find the website as usual, it's badapples.info. You can find my email at gort.klaatu@gmail.com. You can find me on IRC, usually in hash blotta Linux links. That is hash blotta Linux links. And also hash Linux cranks and hash podcast. Just hash podcast. That's the all purpose catch all. Podcasters IRC channel. Okay, if you don't have your own IRC channel, like I do not, then you can go there and you can find me. It's quite handy. So check that out. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, and I'll catch you next time.